Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Slackers. I hope you're all good. Thank you for making it to episode 2 of season 3 of the Slacker Podcast. Big ups to everybody who listened to the Biffy Clyro one from last week, which did really ridiculously well. And thank you very much to Biffy for that as well. If you're fresh and this is the first time you've landed on the doorstep of the Slacker Podcast, then you're very cordially welcome. You don't have to take your shoes on. We're not take your shoes off. We're not that sort of house in here. If you want to know what it's all about, it's very simple. We get to grips with the best artists that we possibly can get, and we dig into the sort of annals of the music that they've made and try and go back as far as we possibly can to grab a demo from the early days. Something that is almost private. It's almost something that you don't want to see. It's like almost like the embarrassing baby pictures. You try and get something from the very, very beginning and use that as a kickstart to go chronologically through their career and chat a little bit of shit as well, because it's fun. Also, because this series is like going completely DIY through me for the very first time, which is very exciting, I started a Patreon, which is patreon.com/slackerpodcast. So if you really enjoy it and you want this podcast to make it to series 4 and just to keep on running, we need engine oil for it. So if you want to become a Patreon, there's 3 different tiers there, and yeah, it keeps the lights on at Slacker HQ, and it shows that you are getting something out of this, and yeah, it helps me out a lot. Thank you very much to the Patreons from who signed up there over the last couple of days. AAT, whoever you are, Leanne Alenis, thank you very much for supporting the podcast, and Narsra Ahmed as well. So yeah, big up to you guys. What have we got coming up in this series? Do I really want to give away all the names yet, or will we do it each week by week? I'll tell you what, at the very end, I'll tell you who's on next week. As usual, you can grab my book, The Phil Taggart Slacker Guide to the Music Industry, which is a book for anybody who's releasing music, anybody who's playing in bands, anybody who's just bought an acoustic guitar, written what they think is the next number one banger, and they don't have no idea how to put it out. That is exactly what that is for. So you can get that from philtaggartslacker.com. And yeah, I'm not going to waffle on too much this week, because I think with a lot of podcasts, they tend to do like 12-minute intros, and you're just like, here, just get to the good bit. So this week we have got Youngblood. Obviously, you've clicked on the title, you know that you're getting Youngblood. And yeah, he is a very fascinating artist. First time I ever came across him was at one of the Slacker nights that I used to put on. He was there with his manager, and he was just this like absolutely rambunctious mental kid that couldn't be tied down. He was hopping all around the place, giving hugs and just hanging out. And yeah, he's blowing up so fast. He's probably one of the sort of artists in the UK that's blown up fastest over the last couple of years. And you know, I think he's been very clever about it, doing a lot of his stuff out of the US. It's just been great to see. I like seeing young people succeed in the arenas that they would like to. And he really, really, as you will get from this conversation, he really, really, really means it. Yeah, I think apart from that, that's pretty much it. I've got my club night, which is starting in Brighton and London, called the Melancholy Social Club, if you want to come to that in April or May. If you sign up, actually, to become a Patreon, you get free tickets to that show. So, yeah, anyway, I'm done selling my wares. All you want to do is hear the conversation with Youngblood, and here it is in 3, 2, 1.
This thing is working. Let me push this a bit more towards you.
Boys, if you want to go and do some work out there as well. Yeah. Honestly, yeah, I was fine.
You just come back in and me and him are sitting kicking the head of each other like, going, fucking hell, how did that happen?
Why this? What are they doing?
What happened?
What would Nicky Six do? That's what we always say, man. It's like, it's the question if we were going to go to the pub, like, what would Nicky Six do? It's like,
your boy.
NGK.
MGK, Machine Gun Kelly, was in
He was in the Motley Crue documentary.
Yeah, he's in the
he was fucking amazing in it.
He was sick, man. He was sick, bro. He was like, he was. I remember watching it in. I was in Notting Hill, man, and it came out, and I could just called him. It was like 2 a.m. where he was, and he's always up. He's a bat like me. He was amazing. He was so good.
See, he's a bit of an actor just like you. You want to get a role like that?
Yeah, flat out, man. I'm literally like, one day, I mean, when the time's right, I want to get my music kind of off the, like, completely off the ground first, you know what I mean? And then...
Who would you play? If you could play anybody in a sort of biopic, like, who would you play?
Biopic? I'd love to play that boy George or something, or Robert Smith.
I see, it's always more difficult when they're alive because, like, you freak out a little bit more about.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, you know, when Johnny Depp played Hunter S. Thompson,
yeah,
he got so close to Hunter S. Thompson, he kind of like changed as a person.
That's the same with like Kells and Tommy Lee, they're mates. I've met Tommy Lee like 4 times now. Tommy Lee's crazy.
Does it get competitive, like, between the two of them? Do they, like, start, like, trying to, like, squeeze limes into their eye and sniff salt? And
Nah, they're pretty chill, to be honest, mate. Tommy's calmed down a lot, obviously. Like,
he kind of has to.
I think everyone's, like from my era to, like, calm down a lot because they're all, like, old ladies' handbags now. You know what I mean? They're always like,
yeah, you see Steve Tyler, he talks about his, like, routine and, like, you know, what he does. And I'm like, you're probably healthier than I am. And you've probably snorted more drugs and cocaine or than Columbia can.
Yeah, completely, like, put together. Yeah, like, it's mental. It's mental. It's just like, it was weird, but people always ask me that. I was like, are you into drugs? I'm like, I've never, because I've got ADHD.
You don't need it.
I wish I could be. But I will still be up at 7 a.m. When everyone hits the dark hour and's like, starts to hate themselves because the come down's coming on, I'm like, let's go get breakfast. Do you know what I mean? I don't know why I've always been that.
Those people must love you then.
Bro, they hate me. I'm like, in the face, like, come on, let's keep going. And, like, get out of my face, Dom.
How long's the longest that you've stayed up?
I mean, this is kind of a bit of a record, to be honest. I think, because I've been writing the album, I've been up for days. I've been sleeping 2 hours, 1 hour a night.
Yeah.
I think once you kind of, like, get into that zone, I just can't sleep. I'm just so wired. Like, I'll start a session at midday.
Yeah.
And I'll go till 7 a.m. And then I'll come back, sleep, get up at 10.
That's intense.
Dude, but the thing about
there's only some people can do that.
But if it's mental, it's like but it's just a time in my life that I'm like that now. Do you know what I mean? I think it's just, it makes me think less.
Do you reckon it's the ADHD or ADHD? I can never get it right.
Yeah, ADHD. I think it's just something. I think I've always been that way.
Yeah.
It first started, though. I remember the first sleepless night I had was before The Great Escape. The first proper sleepless night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
did you not have it as a kid? Like,
that's what I'm saying. As a kid, I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
But my dad used to drive me around in the car, even up to being like 9. My dad used to get up at 3 a.m. and drive me around.
Wow.
And just, like, it was weird, dude. Like, if I get in a car, I am...
You're straight out?
Do you know what I mean? I'm straight.
That's useful now that you're going on tour, right? Like, you're going to be on the tour bus and you're out.
Oh, dude, yeah. Like, it's easy now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was literally with, like, Lewis Capaldi at the airport yesterday because we just landed from...
He's another guy that's not sleeping too much at the minute,
dude,
right?
Dude, we're just crazy. I think the thing about it is, like, we used to know each other in London. Or like when we were both trying to get signed.
What, before it all popped off?
Before anything.
Yeah.
Before, like, literally before I met my band at Slack and I.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, because I remember Chloe played, you know the artist Chloe?
Yeah, yeah.
From Glasgow.
Chloe's from, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's
amazing.
She's killing it right now as a songwriter. And me and Lewis had just kind of be coming to nights like that or just whatever, trying to get a sign in the UK. No one wanted to touch us.
Well, I kind of remember that. Like, I definitely really remember Lewis Capaldi because I gave him his first play on the radio. And I remember when I played it and nobody else would play it after me. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Like, and it was the song Bruises, which was his last single.
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, probably his second last single. But I played that in the radio and fan-wise, it kicked off. But there was, and, like, I mean, they probably won't appreciate me saying this, but it's complete fact. that nobody else was touching it.
Yeah, I think the thing about it is, I think, like, especially, like, it's a sign of the times, man, really, that artistry is so less reliant on kind of, like, media out, I think, now. I think it's a day and age of connecting to people. Like, the biggest artists in the world, like Billie Eilish, man, she wears oversized clothes, completely, one of the first unsexualized pop stars ever, an 18-year-old girl who doesn't give a fuck, who will say what she wants, who isn't talking about her body, she's talking about her brain. A female pop star is talking about her brain and being fucking adored for it. And it's amazing. Lewis Capaldi, a fucking kid from fucking Scotland.
Blocking toilets all around the world.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean now, bro. I mean, it's just like, it's a time of real people.
But everything is always a reaction to what came before. Like, you can see it in music. Like, grunge music killed off hair metal. Britpop killed off grunge. You know, circles are coming and ending all the time. And there's been a long period of prim and proper pop stars who have been happy to do whatever the record label tells them, to be media savvy and play that. And it's fucking boring,
dude. That's what I mean, and that's what culture is. And no one got me in the arena. No one understood me.
Yeah,
everyone thought I was too loud, too bratty. Everyone thought I was naively talking about issues and politics and what was on my mind when the misconception about my generation is that's what we are doing, but we are absolutely the complete opposite. We are an informed generation. We know what we're talking about. We pride ourselves. It's cool to give a fuck now.
I think a lot of the problem stems from the fact that older people think that younger people aren't as smart as they actually are. Like, I can definitely say with a lot of confidence that, like, on general issues and just brain capacity, I was way smarter when I was like 16 or 17, before, like, I'd started drinking, before I'd started playing, like, football, before I was falling over and bashing my head all the time. Like, I'm better at certain skills now, but as an actual open-minded, intelligent person, I think I had more brain cells around that stage.
Dude, I just think it's like the people, that's the one common denominator I find. Like, and I've been all over the world. You know what I mean? I've met young people in Australia, Perth, in Nijmegen, Holland, in Atlanta, Georgia, in Toronto, Canada. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of gone mental how quickly the fan base ignited and the family and the community ignited. And the one common denominator between us all is the intelligence, the strive for equality, and the want to be loved and accepted for who we are that's embedded inside our heads.
Is the problems and the things that people confide in you, which they do, because, like, you've spent a long time bringing your community together, getting your fan base sort of mobilized and very much standing eye to eye with them instead of standing on the stage, if you know what I mean. But is the fears that you have and that they have universal? Like, does somebody in Switzerland or Australia have the same feeling as somebody in the UK?
That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like a such smaller planet now. It's such a smaller planet because everything has become so universal. Like, I can speak to anybody from any country within 2 minutes. We're all thinking the same things. The same things are going through our brains. That's, like, genuinely one thing I've learned. And, like, I'm in the front line. You know what I mean? I've not stopped touring for 18 months, and I'm not going to stop till probably, we're booking shows till March next year.
Does that give you panic?
No, man, I love it.
Yeah?
It gives me purpose.
Yeah?
It gives me, like, at the end of the day, like, that was the reason I got into this. And that was the biggest misconception about me, I think, at the start. I didn't care about what happened. I didn't care about how many streams I got. I didn't care about the radio. I didn't care about the reviews. I was like, I was obsessed with The Clash. I was obsessed with
same here, my favorite band.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Joe Strummer spoke to me in a way where he knew what I was thinking. He'd never even met me. Mm. And he was generations different to me.
There's always been like a, there's so many lines. Like on any given day, a line from Joe Strummer will pop into my head. And the first one that popped into my head when I started working at Radio 1, do you want to make tea at the BBC? Do you want to be? Do you really want to be a cop?
That's what I mean. It's just like, and I didn't want censorship. And every like management or label I would meet would go, no, this is not going to work. A kid in tights and makeup talking about politics. They literally said to me, it's never going to get played on Radio 1. Seriously, that's what they said to me.
Yeah.
They were like, it'll never get played on Radio 1. That's what they said.
But that's why people like me and Jack and Annie and stuff like that are there for, is to stand in front of the kids that are doing something completely different and offer a little help.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. And that was what was mental about the support. And I think, of course, people weren't going to understand me at the start because it was like, what is this?
Mm.
But I wanted to, as I said earlier, I wanted to look people in the eye and them to look at me back, not for any other reason than to be like, oh my God, you're like me. You're exactly like me. You feel exactly the same way as me. That is the one thing that me and my family, people are like, someone came up to me at some bullshit music industry event the other night with fucking loads of canapes or whatever. It's like, what's the secret?
What's the secret?
That's what I'm saying. They were like, what's the formula? Come on. And I was like, I genuinely don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The thing that me and my fans have, and my family, they're not my fans, man, they're my family, they're my community, is we look at each other in the eyes. It's not even, that's why I meet them after every show.
Yeah.
So I can look them in the eye, because we have this mutual thing between us that ain't even a big deal anymore.
Mm.
Where it's, you understand me completely inside out and back to front, and you make me feel like it's all right to be on this planet.
But the thing is, like, if somebody's coming up and asking for the secret, they've already lost. Because the secret, I mean, it's not a secret because there's no real formula to it, but one of the main things that I see, if I had to like be asked, the thing that connects you and the fans is integrity and honesty. Like as I said before, it's grassroots. It's like there's no us and them.
That's
a very punk rock ethos thing. Like, you know, I just love those stories. Like, because I read so much about punk. Because, like, growing up, my generation, like being a teenager in early 20s, had the shittest music scenes of all time. We had, like, New Rave and, like, New Rave, which was, the fashion was Top Man t-shirts, like, lots of, like, glowing clothes. And there was a lot of, like, half decent indie bands. I mean, we had Arctic Monkeys and stuff. Like, I'm pretty much the same age as them, like a little bit younger. So, like, that was all right.
That was sick,
but the one thing I loved about punk is, like, you'd hear stories about them opening the back doors of the gig and just letting their fans in for free.
Yeah,
and sitting and hanging and chilling with them afterwards.
That's what's important to me. It's like, now it's getting to a place, like, I never normally get stroppy because I'm pretty. You know, I mean, I feel pretty lucky to be here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if I kind of ever become like a pop star in inverted commas, I'll, you know what I mean? Throw me in the Thames. You know what I mean? And I remember at Brixton Academy, I always meet people afterwards, and the kind of the fire marshal and the security came in, and he said to my agent, he was like, people have been outside for 3 days.
Yeah.
Been camped outside for 3 days.
Yeah.
If he says meet me outside, there's going to be 5,000 people on Brixton High Road outside the venue.
Well, then that's the key. That's the price.
And that's what I said. But it was, they said, we can't do this. It's too risky. If someone gets trampled, if someone gets stinged, they're going to try and grab you. They're going to do whatever.
Okay.
And I was freaking out because,
well, you have to think about their safety too, right?
I agree. And that's the thing. I was freaking out because on the one, like, I have to see them.
Yeah,
it's a thing I've got. I don't know what the fuck.
You should have done like the.
Trust me. It's like I'll be doing it in a, like.
You should have done like the royal family and like stood from a balcony two floors up, waving at everybody.
I was screaming at my agent. I never get like that. I was like to Paul Franklin and Dee Dee. I was like, I'm gonna fucking see him. I was like, I will walk out there and don't give a fuck. But they were like, everyone, like, we need to take precautions here.
Yeah.
So we kept, I just begged Brixton Academy. I was like, can you just keep the venue open for another hour
after
the show ends? So what they did was I just said on stage, I was like, the light's going to come on, but no one has to leave.
Yeah. I mean, that makes...
I just have to touch them. I have to smell them. I have to fucking cuddle them. I don't know why. It's just because I cannot express this enough. Like, I was very low growing up. I was very misunderstood. I was very depressed. I was very suicidal because I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. I didn't feel like I had a purpose or a place to go. And the reason why I am so in love with them is because they make me feel like it's all right to be alive.
Does time off scare you then?
Yeah.
So, but like the thing is, ultimately at some point, you're going to have to take time off, as in like somebody's going to pull you aside and go, you're going to burn yourself out, which is no good to your fans or you.
I agree, anybody. I think it's...
But how does the idea of sitting on a beach for like a week or two weeks...
I tried it at New Year.
And how are you with that?
Do you want to know what I did? I literally was in Australia.
Yeah.
I was on a beach for... I was supposed to be on a beach for a week. 2 days in, got a flight back. I just called them. I was like, I can't do it. I'm just mental here. I'm on a beach.
Yeah.
In Byron Bay. I'm like, take me back to London.
Yeah.
I went to the studio. Because the thing about it is, for me, like, it's just like, I'm just built differently, I think.
You just need something to keep you going. I mean,
I just need this. I know it sounds mental.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
I'll be doing this till I die. I'll be 75 and my wife, my missus, I'll be like, what are you, are you going to come home? Yeah, you're 75 now.
Yeah.
Why don't you just chill out? And I'll be like, on a 4-track, making shit records that are not going to get anywhere. old and past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Trying to get in with the cool kids, but that's just what I'll be doing because I need this.
Songs for the underrated OAPs.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean?
You'd still be talking about my generation. Yeah. You're old, but
dude, I hope so. Do you know what I mean? I'll just like, I think that's it.
Does it scare you, like, the prospect of growing older and not being into... I mean, like, you're, what, 22, 23?
Yeah, 22.
Like, I'm just like literally 10 years older than you, right? And I'm genuinely getting to that stage now where I'm still in touch with a lot of stuff because I'm always on it with music, right?
Yeah.
But I work with a lot of, like, I've got a label, I've got a little punk band on it. I work with teenage people all the time. Sweet. So I'm never not, and like, it keeps me feeling fucking great. And like, it keeps me relevant in my job at Radio One and stuff because I'm constantly working with teenagers. But there is going to come a time where you're going to be like going, you guys are doing what? You're all vegan now? Nobody drinks anymore?
It's kind of crazy, that's what I mean. But actually, when I meet someone like Dave Grohl and talk to Dave, man, he's like a legend, but he's still so in touch with...
But that's what... It doesn't matter how old you are. It's how much you...
Because it's all a state of mind.
You care and...
I think that's the thing.
Are interested.
I think that's the thing for me. Like, I have 60 to 70-year-olds on my show. People won't believe that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'll tell you, it's like 14 and 15-year-old girls were the first four rows screaming. Then it's 18 to 20-year-old lads beating the shit out of each other. And like, back going up to the stalls is like the parents.
Yeah.
And then the back man is like 80s, like 70 or 80-year-olds. It's crazy.
That's mad.
Because I think it's a state of mind. It's about...
I really can't picture it.
You know,
like,
I mean, it's mad. Yeah. And it's sick, though. It's just like screaming everywhere because it's about acceptance. Young blood is acceptance.
Yeah.
That's what it is. No matter who you are.
Uh-huh.
It's a place to feel accepted and to feel loved and to feel wanted, you know what I mean? And to belong somewhere. And that's what it's about.
It's like the least exclusive club that you feel exclusive being in.
Completely. It's representation for whom represented.
Yeah, perfect.
You know what I mean? And that's why I genuinely believe that we aren't going anywhere overnight. It's not. I never wanted it to be about a song. So much music now is so fucking vapid because, like, you get the hit, we get the fucking media thing, bang, and then 2 minutes later, you're nobody. You fucking, do you know what I mean? You're literally presenting a cooking channel or something. Do you know what I mean? And it's because it's not about, you're not in it for the right reason. You know what I mean? It's like, if I have an hit record, great. If I don't, I'm not bothered about that. I want to play stadiums, that's it.
Well, like, I mean, the hit records help you get there, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, but it's kind of...
Imagine you play, like, Wembley Stadium? How long How long are they going to have to keep Wembley Stadium open for if you want to go meet all the fans
I'll,
for
I'll,
that
I'll
one?
I'll probably be in a car park, I think. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, like, exactly. Just like get a helicopter and it'd be hanging down off
that'd
it, like going across, like touching people's. You should do like a Bon Jovi and get like a zip line so we can like zip like down into your. I mean, what's the point being a rock star, right? And like not being able to do fun shit crazy. Like that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of got to a phase where we can start to do like really fun shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we got Joey Jordison from Slipknot on a drum riser going round and round in 360 and Motley Crue and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, it's the antithesis of what the Clash would do, but at the same time, you got to find your own motor.
Dude, like Travis Scott, man. Like Travis Scott to me is the new modern Clash.
Yeah.
Genuinely, like I'm telling you, like it's weird. Like when I come back home, like sometimes people don't get it as much as America, but the things he has done for young people in America, he's My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
But for a modern generation, mm-hmm. I'm telling you. Like, I've been to a Travis Scott show. Do you know what I mean? I've listened to his music. I know his camp. Do you know what I mean? Some people in his camp. And that's what I find interesting.
That collab would be good, wouldn't it?
Dude, I'd die. I'd love that.
Speaking of My Chemical Romance, they're back. They're playing loads of gigs in the summer in the UK. Surely you're the support for that, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know anything behind the scenes. I was just thinking about it on the train on the way up. That's an easy booking right there.
I love him.
And that would be your test for like a stadium then?
Dude, the thing about it is, man, it's like I love them. I love them. Gerard Way is like an anticipation, like is probably partly a reason for why I am who I am and who I became to be, because I had someone to look up to like that. My friend Claire Abraham in school, I remember she was this redhead girl, and she was always kind of quiet, but she introduced me to My Chemical Romance. I remember where we were. We were at my mate's house, Thomas Broadley.
You all right, Thomas?
All right, Thomas, man, if you're listening. And she played me that album. And it was just crazy to me.
Yeah.
She played me all the songs, like she played me like Famous Last Words and everything, and it just clicked to me in a different way. It just made me kind of feel like I could be an alien. And I said to myself, I was like, I want to do something like that because they did. You know what I mean? If they can...
Well, you can't, like, I mean, your community and fan base and stuff, like, also, do you have a name for them?
They're called the Black Arts Club because of these tattoos.
Yeah, but there you go. Like, I mean, that's kind of, you are doing essentially what he did.
Dude, and that's what's mental about it. It's like, I remember getting these tattoos. I posted it on Instagram that I got these tattoos, and the day afterwards, there were 70 people got tattooed. And I didn't even call it that.
Yeah.
They called it the Black Arts Club. I said, well, that's who we are.
You can't name your own fandom.
And yeah, now there's about 50,000 to 60,000 tattoos out there.
Oh my God.
Which is crazy.
That's mad.
And it's growing every
day. And that's there forever. Like, people will always know.
Dude, and that's the thing about it. That's what it was about for me. It was about making music that would save my life and save other people's lives and make people feel less lonely. That's what it's about. You know what I mean? And that's what we were talking about when you said about truth. The thing I have in my fan base is so amazing that I can write about anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be fuck the establishment for my next five albums.
Because
we're growing up together. That's what this next album's about. It's a coming of age record where maybe me having mental health issues and massive insecurity my whole life wasn't a handicap for me. Maybe it was just a crutch that I could walk down the fucking road of life with, because maybe it was the best thing that ever happened.
Well, see, I've suffered from anxiety and panic attacks since I was a kid. Like, since I was probably about 16, like, it really came on about maybe 16, 17, but actually thinking back further, I was definitely like one of those like anxious kids and have been my whole life. Mm. And I think there's the bad part of it, which makes you overthink things and like you get intrusive thoughts and you feel real fucked up, right? But actually, one of the good things about it is because your mind is overthinking all the time. Sometimes it's overthinking bad things, but sometimes it's overthinking good things.
Completely.
So when you're overthinking the good things, you're really planning your life out ahead of you in a really good way, which gives you actual fucking clarity through the quagmire of shit.
Yeah,
so you can actually follow. You've painted out where you want to go, so then you've got real belief and purpose to go and get that. But the bad side is you have to put up with the dark bit as well.
That's what I'm saying. It gave me purpose, and as I say, like, when there's a moment in the set where I play a song called Casual Sabotage, and I sit and I just play it on an acoustic guitar, and we've got loads of shit live. We've got like triggers and tracks and everything. But yeah, this moment, I sit and my guitar tech comes and plays bass on stage.
Right, yeah.
So we just sit down and just take it down for a second. And this song is called Casual Sabotage, and it's about existing in a world feeling like you're an alien, and feeling so isolated and feeling so in the corner of the room, almost. And every night it just goes crazy. And we played MTV thing last night, and I got everyone to, everyone's just crying mess, and I ain't played it in weeks, for 3 weeks, which is an eternity to me. Yeah. I'm like, I've been writing an album, I'm like, get me back on the road, I need to be on the road. And everyone was just bawling. I started crying my eyes out because there's just, I can't even explain to you, like, if you haven't been to a Youngblood show, and people who are listening, you have, hello, how are you? There's just, it's almost like an implosion where the energy can't get out, so it explodes back into each other and your heart just quivers. And you know what I mean? And I got everyone to look at the camera, because people always ask me, what's my goal? Is it to, do you know what I mean, have like a number one and whatever? And I was like, that's an afterthought to me. It's just to connect to more people, because there's more people out there who feel like they can't be who they are. So I got everyone to look at the camera and just literally scream, you're not alone. At all the cameras, find a camera. And it was amazing.
I love that. Like,
my skinhead, fucking punk dyed hair.
But it's worth it.
Screaming in cameras, just going.
If that shit reaches one person, then it means a lot.
That's it. That's what I said. What's your goal for 2020? I was like, one or a million. I just want to reach people.
Yeah,
and make them
big
feel
time.
Better about themselves.
But like that idea of isolation and loneliness is something that obviously has like been like a heartbeat through your song from the very beginning. Because I've almost forgot to get to the demo, which is called Loner.
Yeah.
So we're gonna jump into it now. Anybody who's listening to this episode of the Slacker Podcast was probably thinking, are they ever gonna get to the demo?
Sorry, yeah. This makes me feel so. I want to be sick when I hear this. I record it on an 8-track.
Right. I tell you what, we're gonna play a little bit of it now, and we'll come back off the other side of this.
So polite. I'm sorry.
Tired eyes, give me a taste of the riot, lad, cause I'd rather be a martyr than grow to martyrs. Keep the young between your teeth, you take the love, take the dogs, take the self-belief, you make your shoes look squeaky clean, but if you want to be a leader, stop being a cheater. Van, because I'm holding a pistol to this old man, cause he made sure my future plans became chain, a time bomb, sleep with the lights on, treating a planet like a playground. Destruction by distraction to cover up the shakedown. Hey now, you better not let me out.
That was a demo of Loner from
Youngblood.
Yeah, it's pretty like scones and scones. Dude, yeah, and scones and jam.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I want it to sound like the Happy Mondays, you know what I mean? And it's so funny, if I released that 30 years ago, it would have been all right.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people fucking don't like me sometimes, because I want to just fucking make it.
I think I remember getting sent that or hearing that. Maybe not that demo, but the other one. And I was like, it sounds a lot like the Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, but like, it was like when we were in there. Oh, that's my phone. That's probably my mum. Dude, she calls
Go
me.
Go on, stick her on then.
Hello. I'm just like, one second. Who is that calling me? It's definitely my mum. Wait.
It's the Arctic Monkeys. They want their sound
back.
Yeah,
it's Alex. It's Alex. He wants No, that's someone from Ireland calling me. That's weird.
From Ireland?
Ireland, yeah.
Is it my mum?
Maybe. It might be your mum.
+353
Yeah, innit? +353 But that's it, man. It's like, I remember being in the studio and like starting with something like that. I just had this song. I did it myself. I recorded everything myself.
Yeah.
I just wanted it to sound like Oasis, Stone Roses, or the Half Mondays, because that's where I come from. I come from the north.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to put this down. I had this idea on Easter Sunday. I went home. And in between Sunday dinner, it just came to me in my head.
Were you living in London at the time
yeah.
that you were doing this? Right.
Yeah, I was living in London and kind of went home for Easter Sunday to see my mum.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I remember I was just...
You must have been popular in your house, like going home for Easter Sunday, not seeing your ma for ages, and then dripping gravy all over your chin and running up to record this song.
Yeah, but I'm serious, man. They're like, fucking shut up. It's Sunday. We haven't seen you in weeks. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, just playing on my grandma's piano. And I got into the studio, I was like, this is so fucking polite. Do you know what I mean? It just sounds, I was like, if I wanted to this to just be an indie record, I'd release it. But it can't be. It needs to be disruptive.
But you, like, your early stuff was a lot more indie than it is now. Like, your stuff's heavier now. It's got more 808s, hip-hop beats.
That's just because I found that world.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved old school hip-hop. But I went to America and I met producers like Nick Mayer, who did all the Juice WRLD stuff and the Lil Tecca stuff, and I met like Taz Taylor from Internet Money, and Lewis Bell, who does all the posty stuff, and just fell in love with this idea that it's all 19-year-old kids making the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's punk. Uh-huh. Fuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was in the studio making indie records with 35-year-old dudes, like, spending five, you know what I mean, doing that. And I was like, it was just refreshing as fuck to me to go over there. And I think that's why some, like, indie bands don't like me a lot, because it's like, it's almost a bit like, how can you fucking be so sacrilegious, you know what I mean? And put an 808 over that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just like...
I mean, who wrote the rules, like?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's just like, I just wanted to fucking...
So that demo had... That was when you were a five-piece band.
Dude, yeah, I mean, that was, like, legitimately, like, early days, I think King Charles had come out, Marry Me had come out, and I just put that down because it was in my head, and that's where I started, because I was obsessed with the Monkees, I was obsessed with Oasis, I was obsessed with Thing, but...
Was that before or after? Because, like, you met your band at my club night, my Slacker night.
Yeah.
Was that after?
That was after I'd met Adam and I'd met Mikey. So Mikey was playing drums.
Yeah, tell me about, like, the Slacker night you came to. Because I met you and I met your manager, I think, at the
time. Yeah, it was like one of my first managers, Jamie and Emmett, the young kids.
Yeah.
Emmett's from Waterford.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
And Jamie's from Australia. And I just signed, like, to a management company. And I was just trying to, you know what I mean, no one wanted to sign me. And I was like, okay, cool, I was going out every night just trying to meet people, trying to meet young A&Rs, trying to meet anyone just to kind of get people to notice me, give a demo or whatever.
It's mad, like, the hustle is real, like.
Oh, dude, yeah, trust me, like, when people, like, ever say to me, like, oh, is it, like, he got it easy, it's like, we were struggling for ages.
I love that idea of you and Lewis Capaldi, two of the most successful artists of the last year, and go.
We were at your club night, like, trying to and demos out and shit. Like, seriously, like, Lewis used to...
Was Lewis with you that night?
No, Lewis wasn't with me, but because I met Lewis through Adam.
Okay.
So, Adam, my guitar player, had just moved to London to go to university to study guitar.
Yeah.
Playing, because he was like in Glasgow, he was like, I need to get out of fucking Glasgow, I want to go to London. I fucking love Glasgow. I was like, I don't know why I love it up here, but I'm glad you did. And Mikey was playing drums for Chloe.
Yeah.
I just came to watch it. Do you know what I mean? Because they were like, man, I was just out, I wanted to be part of the scene. I didn't know who I'd meet there. I might meet someone I could write with, or I might meet a producer, I might meet whatever. And I came and I just met Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And there he, like, literally looked like, I don't know, man, he just looked like Tony Iommi. He's got this big curly
hair. What, he's missing two fingers?
Yeah, he's got this big curly hair. He's like Tony Iommi meets Johnny Marr.
Yeah.
He's got this big curly hair, and he's like, he had this eyeliner and this leather jacket on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so did I. And we both kind of looked at each other. And
did we,
like,
just become best friends?
That's legitimately. It was just kind of like, you belong in my camp. I don't know what that camp is, but you kind of belong. And we started talking about it. And we're like, I remember we were walking about till about 5 a.m. We left.
Oh, I love that. When you've really hatched on something.
Dude, we were walking about, talking about the Smiths, talking about the Cure, talking about the Joy Division film, Control, everything. Yeah. Those people, those things, simultaneously changed our lives at, like, a very similar time. Like, he's a year older than me, so he watched the Joy Division film at, like, 15, and I watched it at 14, or whatever, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and and we were just best mates.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we met Mikey that night, but Mikey was a bit distracted because he was playing. He was, like, loading out and stuff. Yeah. And Mikey was kind of, I think the Chloe thing was kind of like coming to an end, or coming to a maybe.
And she's had a bit of like stops and starts. Like,
yeah, that's what I mean. I think they're kind of taking a bit of time. She was going to go write a record. So I was like, do you want to be in a band? Like, I want to do rock music. And Adam was like, thank fuck, man. And Mikey was like, thank fuck, man. Because Mikey's a rock drummer.
Yeah, yeah.
He was playing all the, like, electro pop.
Yeah.
And no one was doing rock music. I think there was fucking... It was like Rat Boy, and that was about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And fucking a couple others that you know what I mean, were just kind of doing their thing.
Big up mention to Rat Boy as well, who's one of the OGs. He was on my label at the start.
I know Jordan well. Like we hang out and stuff.
He's a good dude.
When we see each other.
That's a cool lab. I'd like to see.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah, I would love to see
that. That'd be cool.
He makes sick beats.
Dude, I love it. It's crazy. It was weird, man. It was just like, we just clicked, and me and Adam, Mikey went back up to Glasgow.
Yeah.
But Adam stayed in London.
Uh-huh.
So we met the next day, even though we'd left each other at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
We met for a coffee at like 1 in Soho, kept walking around, kept talking, went to my old man's guitar shop, played some fucking guitar. And I was like, I had a spare room in my house because I just like...
You're doing all right having a spare room in your house in London.
I'd just done a reality TV show.
Yeah.
I just did that fucking... I were in TV for a bit. I'm miserable.
What was the reality TV?
It wasn't reality TV. I was on fucking Disney Channel.
Oh, Disney Channel. Yeah, I didn't in my research, I didn't even know this.
It's so crazy when people say that. It was called
The Lodge.
Yeah, dude, it was such a different time in my life, which was filmed in Belfast.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was in London. I moved and I was struggling and someone was like, do you want to be in this for a fucking load of money? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Sick. And to me, man, it was like anything would give me a platform to meet people. I had a fucking sick time doing it. Trust me, me and the cast were very naughty. It was sick. So I just kind of like, just had this like flat that I was renting and just running out of cash. Desperately.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I was like, fuck it. I want to be a musician. You know what I mean? So I was just like to Adam. I was like, wait, what are you doing? And he'd moved in to a flat in Clapham. For like 50 quid a week or something crazy like that.
And Jesus.
It was mental because it was so similar. When I first moved down, I came to London at 15.
Yeah.
Like, I literally was like, fucked on it. At 15.
What was your mum like when you were coming down to Doncaster?
It was my dad, man. They were like, I've always been a bit of a wanderer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I was getting a train to Leeds at 12.
Right.
On my own. I mean, I won't be worried, but I'd be like, mum, I'm fine, I promise you. So my mum always knew. If you speak to my mum about it, she's like, I knew he'd go to London. Like, I was like, mum, I got to get out. I remember looking at my mum and dad. I was like, in makeup and stuff. And I was like, I'm never going to be accepted here.
Yeah. But when you, like...
I'm never going to be able to be...
But how do you move down when you're 15? Like, I mean, like, what is the actual logistics of it?
It was like, I found a place in Austerlitz.
Yeah.
With a lady called Marge.
Yeah.
So, like, my mum was like, cool, but you need to go, it needs to be in a halfway house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like a lodger.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not getting your own flat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I couldn't afford my own flat.
Yeah, yeah.
So I paid this lady 75 quid a week. She gave me free breakfast, toast.
And she was just basically like a kind of surrogate.
She was just like in an house. Do you know what I mean? So it was like, if the fucking house caught on fire, she'd wake me up and I wouldn't die. Do you know what I mean? Or she'd like make me a cup of tea when I was missing my mum or something. I don't know. And I moved in with a kid called James. He was like still close to me to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, it was kind of weird because it was just hilarious. Like, it was like loads of cats and I have asthma, so it was fucked.
Oh my God, I've got the same. I've lived in a house with cats before and I almost died.
But I was like, I got free breakfast and I was skinned. So she always used to have this, like, she always used to buy, like, you know, tiger bread.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
She used to, loads of butter. I lived off tiger bread for a year. So I had no money.
What was an average day for you when you were 15 roaming around London?
It was like, because I came to London and I went and I looked around and I got into an art school.
Right. Okay.
In Chiswick.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool, man, this is going to be amazing. Like, I've got into fucking art school.
I'm going to meet people to play in a band.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly.
That's how it works, right?
I'm going to be able to be who I am finally. All this suppression on my head, I'm going to get to be who I am.
Uh-huh.
But it was the worst thing ever because they were trying to paint, like, it was painted by numbers.
Oh, shit, right, okay.
It was like, this is how it should be done. This is the formula. And I was like, I couldn't fucking handle it. Because the one place in the world that was supposed to accept me for who I am...
It's art school.
You know what I mean? Cast me aside. I lined up. I saw an advert for a young people wanted for a TV show.
And you're like,
in line for 7 hours in...
X Factor style.
In East London, and mm-hmm. it was the Disney show.
Mm-hmm.
And when it first turned out to be Disney, I was like, okay, cool, wow, that's a bit... Because I'm just fucking in me Fred Perry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. Creepers. Literally, that's what I looked like.
Yeah.
And I went in and played, like... I think I played, like, Friday I'm in Love by The Cure or something. And uh-huh. I also was singing, like, Baby. But they kind of... I think they liked that.
Mm-hmm.
They liked the darkness of it.
They wanted a better rough.
Yeah, I think so. And they liked the darkness of it. And I got it. And then I did that. I was supposed to be on for 3 years, but after a year, I was like, please, can I leave? I never really...
Is it still going?
No, anymore. I think they did 3 series and caught it. But I was like, I was just trying things. I never really belonged anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to art school. It didn't work. I did that. It didn't work. I was like...
I think that's an important lesson for people listening. Like, you're young and... Or it doesn't actually matter what age. It doesn't matter what age. It's just try as much stuff as you can until something sticks.
I mean,
I played in bands for 10 years and then it got the radio and then I was like, hold on. This is me.
That's what I mean. And the thing about it is, man, it's like... That's the thing about this generation. Why the fuck could I not be on a Disney show and then be in a fucking punk band? It don't matter.
Yeah.
Because I was me. I was always me doing it.
I mean, look at Miley Cyrus.
That's what I mean. She's more punk than any of us.
Like, Hannah Montana.
Fucking punk.
And then she's... Oh, wait,
lighting a joint on stage at the Grammys. You know what I mean? I was like... Be fearless. That's one thing I would say to people. I always say that. Like, be fearless. Because you can figure it out. No matter what you want to do, no matter who you want to be, it'll work out if you believe it.
Yeah, you just have to keep going at it, don't you?
Yeah, and I think and after that, sorry. So getting back to the Adam story, we went on a tangent. Was that I was in a similar place to me when I first moved down?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like running out of money. I was like, fuck it, move in with me. Let's start a band. Let's do this.
Yeah, full time.
Let's fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's gonna be shit. Because we have no one. I've got a manager
mm-hmm.
who genuinely believed in my ideas of what Youngblood was going to be. I figured it all out.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what it's going to sound like. This is what it's going to look like.
You've traced it. Now you have to colour it in.
Completely. I'd written Marry Me. I'd written King Charles. I'd written Polygraph Eyes. Mm. I'd written Tim Pan Boy. And I sat down with an acoustic that day. I remember, I literally was like, Adam, come to this fucking place. We sat in the living room with 2 acoustic guitars. And I played him the stuff, and Adam went, fuck, this is really cool.
Mm.
And he was so cool. I can't believe I'm saying this, you're a twat. He's so fucking cool, man. Like, he's my best friend, and he's so fucking cool. And he's always my cool meter. And when I push things, he's always like, have I gone too far?
What was the thing that sort of took you out of that sort of traditional indie guitar world into where you're at now? I mean, like, there obviously there are the elements of that have stayed, but like, what's the one thing that
I met a producer called Matty Schwartz who did Massive Attack.
Mm.
He did Mezzanine.
Wow, yeah.
And
I mean, trip hop is essentially indie and hip hop beats kind of filter through a little bit of weirdness.
We sat down because I've written these songs, and he loved it. He could see the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Polygraph Eyes that was the change, because I'd recorded King Charles in a day. I'd recorded Marry Me in a day. We did Tin Pan Boy. All these angsty records that was this simmering pan that was dying to get the fuck out my whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
I just write songs and the production has just got to serve the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, that's one of the hardest things to learn is actually, you know, I ain't like try and when less is more, you know?
I'm not going to try and squeeze something into a box because it's going to fit more with my, like what I've done before.
Yeah.
Because if you do what you've done before, then you just go around in circles.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Trust me, like, my next record, man, like, everything, man, I've been experimenting, like, gospel and stuff, everything, like, why not? Because it's just it just comes out.
Well, you're a Clash fan, man. The Clash...
Exactly.
Over the course of their records.
This is like Lost in a Supermarket and Train in Vain, like completely.
It's Train, like, yeah, exactly. Lost in a Supermarket's it's power pop.
Yeah,
it's a power pop record, and then you listen to some stuff in Sandinista, and it's like dub reggae.
That's what I mean. It's just like at the end of the day, like they were such genre defiers, like early on.
Wasn't your granddad in T-Rex?
Nah, that's so funny, but like,
because that's on it's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, like exactly.
But is that true?
It's
or not?
So funny. No, I think he played with him like once when he became Adonis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think
he was like a turd. Like, he was like a sort of like,
yeah, like a muso,
local musician,
like a muso that like people used to get to play like piano. Like they always used to do.
What was he a bit of a local legend then?
Yeah, man, he's sick, man. He's great on the keys. He's got fucking arthritis in his hands though. It's kind of sad he can't play anymore. Oh, sucks.
Fuck. Yeah, that does suck.
He's got like claw hand.
Yeah, well, it's like
Joe. Yeah, he's got like, you know when Bill Nye's got like that. His hand. If you look at his hand in movies, his hand shuts.
Yeah,
and it's a thing where your tendons like shrink, so your hand becomes a fist.
God, that's horrible, especially for a piano player. Like,
yeah, man, yeah. It sucks. It's fucking shit. But it was cool, man. He's got his I think he's got his right hand still. So at Christmas, I mean, I was doing the left hand. And he was doing the
that's really cute.
Yeah, it was cool.
Like, but then maybe it doesn't shock because sometimes they say things skip a generation. Maybe it didn't come as that much of a shock to your mum or dad that you like ended up in this it runs in the family, right?
It was weird, man. Like, I always talk about, you know what I mean, an older generation not understanding me, and it was weird, man. We're growing up,
but then the super old one does.
Yeah, they do. It's like, it's weird, man. My mum and dad were sick. You know what I mean? They were cool. Like they understood me as much as they could. Mm. You know what I mean? Obviously, like it's.
Parents aren't really meant to understand you. That's just how it's meant
when
to be.
When your kid's not the ideal kid, they're going to try and love you anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I was not the ideal kid.
Were you getting expelled? Were you like...
I was getting suspended. I had massive ADHD problems.
What was the worst thing you got suspended for?
I mooned my maths teacher. Because someone told me to do it. Like, going down, I was like, fine. Jacob Spooner. Thanks, mate. Jacob Spooner. I was like, going,
Jacob Spooner made you pull a mooner?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, pressed it against the window to my maths teacher, Miss Ammo.
You pressed it as well. I mean, that makes it worse.
Yeah.
That probably added another week to the suspension.
Dude, I remember the deputy head, when he suspended me, were laughing. He's like, how the fuck can you suspend me laughing? He was like, I'm going to have to suspend you. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? You're laughing at me. Why are you suspending me? Do you know what I mean? He was laughing at me.
So, but like, was the ADHD something that like you had to control? Like, I mean, or was it something that's better left?
Yeah, I mean, did they put you
on like Ritalin?
Or? But my mum was like, my son's a ghost. Do you know what I mean? Like when that shit, it either works on you or doesn't. Do you know what I mean? I think that's what the song Medication is about.
Yeah.
It's so easy now. People just overprescribe.
There's a real bad crisis of like Xanax and
it's crazy.
Blueies what's the other one?
Oxycontin.
It's all anti-anxiety medicine.
It's taking.
It's
over-the-counter heroin, man. It's the beats changed. It's so funny, isn't it? When you look at music, like
it's like that ASAP Rocky Clamps Casino style hip hop
roll. It's like it's where. If you like, music changes with drug culture. It always does, man. If you look at like the 60s, it was all cocaine. So it was like, do you know what I mean? And fucking do
Manchester, the Hacienda, ecstasy.
Yeah, it was always that shit. Do you know what I mean? The Stone Roses, pills. You know what I mean? Mm. It was all, and it's kind of interesting because like trap music. There's a lot of roll in music as well. Do you know what I mean? And people like to roll to it and like to sip lean and like to take codeine.
When you say roll, like somebody's listening to this doesn't know what that means. What do you mean?
It's kind of like, if you imagine rolling, a rolling down a hill, it's like a circular motion.
Yeah,
your head kind of like, it's not too in your face because it can spook you. You know what I mean? If you're rolling on E or you're rolling on... thing. I don't really do drugs, but I understand it because I speak to a lot of musicians and you know what I mean, who do, and it's just a culture thing within that scene, and it's like it's the beat. If you listen to like the perfect fucking rolling record, is like Topanga by Trippie Redd.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'll play it after. It's upbeat, it's happy, but it just rolls along down the hill, and you kind of trip out to it.
Is drugs as prevalent in the music industry as like people have made it out to be over the years? Do you think?
I think young people are always going to do drugs. You know what I mean? And as I say, like that's just the way, that's the way it's going to be. That's they always have, we always have, we always will. You know what I mean? It's just a part of growing up, experimenting and feeling things. But I always say, be safe. Get you like at festivals, man, in Australia, they've got drug testers.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you is because you've blown up so fast. Obviously maybe you don't think it's so fast, but I've been working in the game since maybe about 2012 on the radio. And I haven't seen anybody blow up as fast as you, apart from maybe Billie Eilish, and she went fast too. But Anne Lewis, over the course of about 2 years, you went from playing to nobody to playing to everybody.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What is it like to be your age and actually being able to, actually have expendable income and does that, when you've got that amount of money at your age, can it be a dangerous thing? As in, you can basically get what you want when you want it now, if you want it.
I think that's what the thing about it is I'm so lucky to have a team, and I was brought up in a family business, man. Do you know what I mean? So of course,
what was the family business?
We just ran a guitar shop.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was in Donny.
Yeah.
We had a guitar shop so that if we had a good day, we'd be counting take-ins over a Chinese takeaway. If we had a bad day, we'd be having a fucking ham and cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
A soggy ham and cheese sandwich. You know what I mean? I think that's it. They always taught me that, you know what I mean? My mum and dad was like, it doesn't matter what you've got, as long as happiness was kind of happiness out of life instead of money. And achievements and success in life instead of money was embedded in me. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, very yeah.
Kind of northern way of feeling.
I feel like Northern Ireland and the north of England are very similar. Very similar.
And I think, yeah, it's kind of crazy that I can buy a fucking dope pair of shoes or a Louis bag and be like, that's sick, man. Because that's kind of, I love fashion. I love that shit. But as I say, what's kind of amazing is I got a good team. I don't think about money. I'm not doing it for that. I'm just
I don't get the idea that you've got a check in your eyes.
I'm just that's secondary. People my management's forcing me to go see my accountant and shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just here for the music and the community and the connection.
Have you spoiled your parents? Have you spoiled your mum?
Yeah, man. What
have you done for them?
It was a good Christmas, man. I was like, you know what I mean? My dad, I don't know when this is coming out, but it's my dad's birthday on the 5th of February.
Mm.
When is it coming out?
It'll be after that.
Hard sick, so I can say that.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy, he wants to be a sailor. You know what I mean? And I was like, one day I'm going to buy him a belt or something, I think. He wants to grow old and sail.
Yeah,
which would be sick. So I'm gonna get him a sailing triple A, a sick as fuck one.
Yeah, yeah.
Get him a luxury sailing thing with my mom, and I love, you know what I mean, I love that, and it's crazy. It is amazing to be able to kind of, you know what I mean, go for a nice meal and shit. I want to buy a house. I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to buy a house in London.
You do?
Yeah. That'd be crazy. And it's just crazy. It's sick, man. Me and Lewis were saying that we were just in LA.
Imagine just buying a house together.
Dude, that'd be so hard. We were just in LA with each other, and we were just looking at each other this is genuinely mental.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's genuinely mental.
Yeah, you've both popped around at the same time.
Yeah, dude, that we're in here, and we were together. I was there when he released Bruises. He was there when I released King Charles. We were in Canavans in Peckham. When King Charles came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. It was crazy. And to be in Los Angeles and there's fucking five paparazzi waiting outside to get us on the way out, it's just obscene to us. Do you know what I mean?
That style of the paparazzi thing, and that comes with fame, but it also comes with being connected to other famous people. So when you started going out with Halsey, I'd imagine the paparazzi and stuff like that probably kicked in a little bit harder than it did beforehand.
It was as I say, yeah, absolutely, man. She's massive.
Is it easier going out with somebody else who does the same sort of thing that you do? Because they understand the pressures and what it's like to be a touring musician and have a level of infamy.
And Ash's relationship, Ash's Halsey. Her name's Ashley, that's Halsey's an anagram of Ashley.
Yeah.
what was interesting about our relationship was we met each other and we were kind of an escape from it. You know what I mean? If you like, you look at, like, I don't know, like, in inverted commas, whatever you say, like, a celebrity couple or whatever, we were kind of wanted to be the opposite of that. We just weren't interested. Like, we met each other for a beer and just started, and we're just talking for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours because we were from the same place. She's from New Jersey, which is, like, the Donny of, do you know what I mean, or the Sheffield of...
It's like Sopranos'
of,
show.
Yeah, completely.
And yours is like where Shameless is.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I mean. And it's
you're Shameless, she's Sopranos.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay,
we
got
and
it.
And that's why we got on. And as I say, it was there.
Yeah.
Yes, people were following us around. Yes, whatever. And it's intense. And she's like, you know what I mean? Like it, that was part of her life massively.
You know, I think it's really weird that, like, you were such an Oasis fan growing up and now you're going out with one of their daughters.
I'm not going out with her.
Are you not going out with her?
No, I'm not dating her. I'm not dating her. That was a Sun story.
Oh, was it?
The bloody Sun, yeah.
I don't read the Sun. I must have seen it somewhere else.
Yeah, dude, like, it's crazy.
I can't read the Sun because of
so funny.
Various reasons.
It's me and Anais, so, like, she is the best, bro. Like, she's crazy. Like, I can see why people would think it because, like, on the outside, like, we're very affectionate to each other, but it's more like a brother-sister kind of thing.
Do you have a favorite Gallagher brother?
I think they complement each other. Do you know what I mean? I think Oasis.
What,
like,
was it? There was a...
Knowles the songs and, like, Liam's the attitude, isn't it?
Have you ever seen the clip of Pete Doherty when he was 15 standing outside a record store waiting for the album?
Yeah, dude, it's so funny. It's like, how did you describe Oasis? Trousers.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
It's like, Noel's the town crier. No, no, no. No,
Noel's the poet.
And Liam's the town crier. Yeah.
And
he's like, can you say that again?
Yeah. I had Pete Doherty on the last season of the podcast.
Oh, sick.
And I asked him about that. And he said that he was part there for Oasis and part there because he heard those TV cameras and he wanted to get on.
That's completely. Yeah, I love the Liberty as well. That's what me and Adam bonded over massively. Like, we just wanted to be Pete and Carl.
Yeah, well, especially when you're living in London and broke and writing some music, and that's kind of what they did.
Like, we had crazy stories. We moved in when Mikey moved out of London. We moved into a 2-bed flat in Clapham.
I mean, was it a party house? Or was
that's what I'm saying. It's so funny. Like, all the fucking tabloids like used to talk about, like, because Lewis used to be around all the time. We used to get like pissed on lager.
Yeah,
get fucked. We'd be drinking all day, like. Mm. And playing music, and the neighbours hated us because we'd just be bringing everyone back and everyone would be at our house.
Mm.
Just play, like, we'd have amplifiers because all our gear was in the house. We'd have a drum kit in the front room and we'd be, like, full on rehearsing at 5 a.m. on a Tuesday night after coming back
from... I'm so glad I'm not your neighbour.
...the world's end. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it was just... We were just all jamming. It was just shit. We were terrible because we were just all hammered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it was just... It was a kind of a very depressive but beautiful time of our
I know what you mean. Like, you were the highs were high and the lows were low.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was nothing in the middle.
You know what I mean? We'd just go up to Camden and we'd have black coats and eyeliner looking like and scarves. Trying to look like Pete and Carl.
To be fair, like you wouldn't have stood out in Camden.
No, that's what I mean. And we didn't want to. We were just like, this is sick.
Listen, I've took up enough of your time. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And I'll watch what you're doing from a distance, and I'll be tired for you. How about that?
Dude, yeah, man, I can't wait to show you what we've got coming. It's pretty.
What's the album called? Do you know?
Don't know.
Are you allowed to say?
I don't know. I'm playing with ideas. But I know it's going to be a massive coming of age story, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Happy days.
Rockstar.
Well, I think we all know a little bit more about Youngblood right now. What do you think? That was episode 2 of series 3 of the Slacker podcast. Thank you so much for listening to it. Thanks very much for getting to the end of it. If you enjoyed it, give the show a rate and review on the Apple Podcast forum. And yeah, apart from that, all I've left to say is I have a brand new club night, which is starting, called the Melancholy Social Club, which has a date in the Waiting Room in London, and at the Rossi Bar in Brighton as well. I'll put all the ticket details on below, but it's basically me and a couple of decent DJs playing club music for people who don't really like going mental clubbing. It's like soulful, groove-laced dance music, some like chill hip-hop. It's just like it's just all about really, really good, well-selected tunes, and it's called the Melancholy Social Club. Come into Brighton, come into London. If you sign up on Patreon VIP, you get free tickets, and yeah, that's about it. Thank you very much for listening. Next week on the podcast, we will have the mighty Fontaines DC.